Prosecco, our very last episode of the year. So tonight we are going to talk about all of our favorites and least favorites, and then this weird kind of middle ground of movies that we like but might have not been seen by most of the people out there. So we're going to kick things off with our worst movies of the year, and I'm starting with a movie called November Man, which I already kind of forgot existed. It's that, like, action, you know, XTIA, Black Ops, whatever organization he's part of.
Who knows?
Movie with Pierce Brosnan, where he's got some beef with this other guy, and he goes on
it's
some, like,
non-bug
revenge mission.
Yeah, but, like, that movie made no sense. Like, it didn't make sense when we saw it, and I was trying to remember the details, and I was like, no, I got nothing.
It was like Bond plus Taken plus,
race
like,
scene.
Lots of race, plus race sexism equals question mark? I don't know what the fuck
oh,
that movie
man.
Was.
Man, it was so upsetting. It was by far the most, like, we saw a lot of movies this year that treated women like garbage, but I think this was the most misogynistic movie of the year.
Yeah, it was misogynistic in a way that I was just like, is that something that we can still, like, say and
yeah.
do things like that in polite society? Like, is that still a thing that,
like,
they're letting people get
away
like with?
It feels supposed to be like old Bond movies, but it's like way more misogynistic than old Bond movies. Like, there's a rape scene that's like,
there's a
right,
girl
guys,
who gets
rape scenes.
There's a girl who gets either killed or, like, horribly wounded just because she's like
she had the audacity to shut up.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And
like,
they actually basically
there was
said
that,
her,
like,
whole
sorry.
Plot twist, too, where it, like, was her, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was very uncomfortable.
Just remember that.
It was even worse at treating women than our next film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, November Man made no sense, and it was super sexist. This was also super sexist and
made
very
sense.
Little sense. Yeah.
But slightly less sexist and slightly made more sense.
It was Sin City,
that's
too.
Fair.
It also came out in August, because August hated us. Sin City 2 was a long-awaited follow-up from Sin City, and Robert...
too long?
Oh, too long. Robert Rodriguez totally lost momentum, and this movie doesn't make a lot of sense, and it's stupid. But it does have Eva Green being naked a whole
is
lot,
there
which is...
anything about it that makes it a sequel, now that I think about
yes.
it?
Yes.
I mean,
the Jessica Alba plotline is continued from the
that's
last
true.
There
that's
true. That's
like,
about it.
Yeah.
It's
but
a stupid
like,
excuse.
But guys, as we went over when that happened, Jessica Alba cannot act, and they need to stop. Like, I like her, she's darling. You
she
can
can't
put her...
really dance, either.
No.
That's the whole point of her character.
Oh, God. Oh.
It's like anyone could do hair whips and roll around on the floor.
I mean, like, yeah, our top five is just a cavalcade of bad acting, but, like, you know, I like Jessica Alba in Sin City 2 better than I like the star of our next movie.
Oh, we're going into the next one. Who's got that?
That's me! Speaking
fun.
Of bad acting, Transcendence is the movie that, if you were on the fence about Johnny Depp, this is the one that probably tipped you off. Because he used to be a great actor. I remember when I remember fondly the days that I liked him, but holy crap. In this movie, so this is the movie about how Johnny Depp is a computer scientist who then becomes the computer?
It's one of the first movies
you know?
In a while.
Like
that
the non-Lucy?
Yeah.
Yeah, the
okay. Well, it also asked him, oh, right, you never had to watch Transcendence.
Nope.
Guys, this is how much
away.
We hated this movie, is that Angie and I were able to get it on our top five, even though Perry hadn't seen it.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, this is, like, Angie pointed out when we reviewed it, it's the first time in a while Johnny Depp has been asked to play a normal human being.
Yeah,
it's
in the beginning.
Completely unbelievable.
In the beginning, he's, like, playing a normal person. He's just like,
hello,
I'm a person. This is what person do? Like, it's just like, no,
wife
Johnny
lady,
Depp.
Go to thing and do
now
things.
Now I don't have to see the movie ever.
Yeah, no, we acted that out perfectly.
And he's somehow more believable when he becomes a computer, but all of that stuff just makes zero sense, is incredibly boring, thinks it's clever, isn't clever, looks like shit despite the fact that it is directed by Wally Feister, who made all of Christopher Nolan's movies look really pretty. Somehow he couldn't
it's
do that
so
for his own
ugly,
movie.
And
yeah.
not like artistically ugly, just flat and dull looking.
I just realized that movie perfectly connects to our next worst movie too.
Yay!
Because Johnny Depp is in it as well.
He is, and I didn't know that, and I got so mad when that
oh,
happened.
Oh, God.
We're going
that looks
a good
awful.
Clip.
Lonnie didn't realize too, and I watched with her, but our next movie is Tusk, which is Kevin Smith's movie, and I'll tell you, I was looking forward to this thing, because I saw the trailer, and I'm like, shit, this could be great. It's like the most bizarre form of torture porn I've ever seen in my life. But then the movie skips the torture part, and he,
yeah.
like, gets his leg chopped off, and then all of a sudden, it skips, like, that would have been the best part of the movie, is, like, seeing the transformation into a walrus.
Well, especially because
like,
that's
nope.
the whole premise. That's what they set you up with, is it's going to be about this guy's transformation into a walrus, and then it's, like, one weird scene, and then monologue.
And then montage.
Oh,
then you get like a montage and all of it. Holy fucking
and then
shit!
You get,
the walrus. I've never seen anything
no
like
sense.
That in my life.
It makes no sense.
I will say the first half of that movie, I was just like, huh, Kevin Smith is like stretching himself. This is like kind of a not
first
a bad
30
thriller.
Minutes,
except for the fact
then,
that every single speech that came before that was boring as shit.
Oh, there's
so
many monologues.
Like that,
all
that
very
whole
boring.
Scene before anything bad even happens, I'm just like, why do I even care about what you're saying?
Yeah, it's a thing where I worry that maybe the fandom has just corrupted him, where he only listens to his fans, and his fans are just like, you're you're great. He's just like, I'm killing it.
You don't have to guess. You know that because you know how angry he gets whenever people don't like his movies.
It's just unfortunate because I think it could have been a really interesting spin on torture porn. Like seeing the slow transformation and like how his mentality changes and why Michael Parks' character so desperately wants to like.
But
like,
it goes
how
from
how
like,
did he learn to do that even? Like no, seeing that whole procedure would have been
fast.
Great.
It doesn't. Yeah.
The other thing that bums ridiculous.
The other thing that bums me out about it is like this. There's Justin Long is kind of like a Kevin Smith surrogate, and there seems there's a part where you're just like, has Kevin Smith become self-aware? Oh my god, yeah, no, he hasn't. But this is the only one we don't have a good segue for, and I'm so bummed. But Christine,
yeah, who cares? Because it's the best worst movie there is.
We put it on our number one.
You
guys know,
probably guess.
Yeah, if you've been watching our podcast, you're aware of how obsessed with Winter's Tale we are. And you got so upset that she spilled her prosecco. But yeah, Winter's Tale was by Akiva Goldsman, and by all accounts should have been an amazing movie. It had a great cast, it has a award-winning book. It's so inconceivably nonsense. I remember with the plot line doesn't make sense, the pieces don't fit together, the love story doesn't really gel, and like the thing is though, guys, and why it's our number one is because it is a movie that doesn't fail to be a movie. It has no filmic language, it doesn't flow together. But it makes us so damn happy.
It's because there's just so many, like, brilliantly stupid decisions. Like, who the fuck chose to make Colin Farrell's hair look like that? Who said okay to the face-ripping scene? Like, how did nobody realize on that set that, like, looking at a bloody finger painting and then holding it up next to a living person? Just, no.
But the other thing, but the other thing that makes it the absolute best, absolute worst movie of the year is that, unlike a lot of the other movies we've talked about, people were trying so hard on this movie.
They were.
Like, a lot of the other ones we've talked about, it seems like people were lazy, or, like, weren't thinking, or, like, were, you know...
I wonder
like,
if they were making it, they're like, this is, like, a potential Academy Award winner.
I feel like,
look at all
maybe,
the people involved.
Yeah.
It's,
no,
like,
I feel
famous
like, yes.
source
I feel like some
it's an award-winning screenwriter who's directing it.
Oof. Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely...
Winter's Tale is a garbage movie, but
sadder.
Guys, it's a garbage movie that I will keep watching.
Yeah. It is a garbage movie that inspired us to drive
it's,
all the way up to upstate
New
York.
We did Winter's Tale.
It's
a garbage movie that seriously has created some of, like, my favorite memories of this year.
Winter's Tale, guys.
There's something to be had from that.
Let's toast
right.
to Winter's Tale
oh, yeah?
before we move
right.
on.
Gladly.
Winter's Tale toast.
Yay! These are plastic glasses, which is why we have to supply our own clinks.
That's why, I was bullying. Clink! Everyone was fooled. So we're gonna move on to the most overlooked movies of the year. And these are just, we each decided to pick a movie that we hope you sought out, because we thought they were really fun and didn't get a lot of play. I'm gonna kick it off with Death Note 2! Better Off Red? No, what was it?
Red versus Dead.
Better Off Red. That's my
that
movie.
Too.
Right? Death Note 2 is great because if you didn't see the first Death Note 2 doesn't give a shit. It gives you the whole recap of the first movie, the first 5 minutes, in this, like, high adrenaline, like, exploitation-style trailer, and then dives right into the craziest fucking plotline of the year involving Nazi zombies who return from the dead and wanted to complete the mission that Hitler failed to. And it's so violent, and it's so absurd, and there are so many things where you think to yourself, they're not gonna do that. That'd be a bridge too far, that'd be too fucking crazy pants. And then they do that shit, and they do it with style. And I don't want to give it away, but this movie had my favorite ending of all of 2014, because I was screaming, I was laughing so hard, and Perry can attest to that.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I heard it all, it happened.
And I've occasionally through the year, because it is online, but I really recommend watching the whole movie, it is online, but I've watched it again, and it still makes me so happy, because it's just, someone out there, guys, is super twisted, and his name is Tommy Wirkola, and I adore the way he makes movies.
You know, I have to say, this is, like, what we're doing right now, this would actually be the perfect context in which to watch Dead Snow 2, because it's a movie that, like, if you watch it with a lot of your friends
maybe
and you're drinking,
maybe
then
it should be the next one
it's better.
Watch.
Maybe.
Good ideas. All right, so next one is mine, and I'm going with The Signal, because I think it's just a brilliant blend of sci-fi and horror. I've heard a couple people that aren't that thrilled about it, and they don't love it as much as I do, but I've kind of gotten into the habit of watching it over and over, and I think it's a beautifully shot movie.
It is really beautiful.
I just can't stop looking at it, and I love the idea of it. I mean, we've never really seen something quite like that, with where it starts and what it turns out to be. I don't want to spoil anything, but I mean, I feel like I'm knocking one of my favorite movies, but I get why some people might not be satisfied in the end, but I had so much fun watching it and so much fun seeing, like, there's a lot of suspense in this movie. There's a really great, almost like a superhero quality to it, too. It's a lot of fun to look at and a lot of fun to go through. So I highly recommend checking that one out.
And I want to finish up the segment by talking about Zero Motivation, which is an Israeli movie about these women who have, you know, so military, you have to go to the military in Israel, and so they're
compulsory
in the military
service,
yes,
right?
That's the phrase I was looking for. And they don't really want to be there, so, and they also got assigned to, like, the office part, like, their job is doing paperwork, so it's basically, it's a military movie, but it's more, like, Office Space than it is, like, you know, Unbroken or, like, American Sniper.
I don't think I would have ever expected someone to compare Zero Motivation with Unbroken.
We did it here, guys. Mark it down.
But it's just, like, it was such an unexpected movie. It came out of nowhere. It surprised me, and I think that's why it's been overlooked, is because, like, nobody's heard of any of the people in it or any of the people who made
it.
I'm
still saying a Zero Motivation TV show would be a brilliant idea.
It would
really
be a
funny.
Brilliant
it
show. It's
I would absolutely
so funny.
Watch a Zero Motivation TV show.
It's so funny. The women in it are amazing and hilarious.
A lot of people are comparing it to Stripes, so
yeah.
If you think this sounds too far afield, no, it's really universally done.
It reminds me, it makes me think a lot of We Are the Best, too. Because
yeah.
It's like a foreign film with like a core group of girls, but just like their behavior and how unique they are and their behavior
and
how much they like they believe in what they want to.
Yeah, and also because everybody has one had an ambition that they didn't actually want to put anything toward, which is something that happens. And also everyone's had a shitty job that they have found their own method of coping with. And I think both of those are things people can relate to.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that it reminded me of We Are the Best is just how fully formed the characters feel. Like you think it's
like real people you could be friends with.
Yeah, you're like, oh, it's gonna be like types. But they're not types. They feel very like fleshed out and real. And like my favorite character in it, I think, was Daffy, who is Daffy, as her name suggests. Mm-hmm. But she's like weirdly very motivated and very ambitious. It's just about things that have nothing to do with her job. And she's like motivated and confident to the point of
she's
being delusional, but again, not
she reminded me a lot of Cher from Clueless, where like she had all these big ideas and you're just like, you're applying your energies to the weirdest shit in your life.
Yeah.
But I think we all agree. Yeah, Zero Motivation. Check
yes.
it out too.
And
all
now,
right. Yeah.
We ready to move on to
the
best.
We're doing the top six, guys, because we do what we want.
All right, so number six on our list was actually my number one, and it's Wild. And I cannot believe how many times I've watched this film, and I'm a little surprised by how much I was just completely taken and totally moved by it. I just remember I borrowed Christy's screener, and it was like one night where I should have gone to bed, and it was on, and I couldn't stop it. Like, I had to keep seeing, like, the next step of her journey, where I got kind of obsessive with it, and all of a sudden it was, like, 3 a.m, and I finished the whole movie, and then I couldn't fall asleep, because I couldn't stop thinking about it. I mean, I don't have the same problems she had in the movie, thank God, but there's a lot of really universal messages in it, just like in terms of like dealing with loss and trying to make yourself a better person, and a lot of it's very inspiring and touching, and it really does make me want to go on that trail and do it.
Really? I had the opposite reaction. Like when I heard about the movie, I was like, huh, that kind of makes me want to go hiking, and then I saw the movie, I was like, nope. I don't know.
The more I watch it, it's like, there's parts of it where I'm like, shit, I would just, like, kill myself right at that spot, but
I would never be there.
Really?
No. I'm not that much of an outdoor kid, no. I enjoyed watching it, but it's like I enjoy watching documentaries about the ocean. Yes. I think they're fascinating. I'm not going to the ocean.
I discussed this a little with Angie the other day. I'll do it if I get LASIK. I think my biggest fear with PCP is that I wouldn't be able to wear my contacts.
You can totally do it. Remember James Franco's character in 127 Hours had contacts?
There you go. Problem solved. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, things turned out horribly for him, but that wasn't because
he has contacts.
He takes them out. It was like a scene in the movie that freaked a lot of people out because he was like touching his eye.
Oh, sorry, I remember.
Let's move on.
But anyway, Wild is a really special movie, and it touched me like in a personal way that I wasn't expecting, and I can't stop watching. I really can't stop watching. It's a problem.
I feel like that's going to be a theme for a lot of our favorites, because, you know, they're our favorites. But my favorite movie of the year, which you may remember because we talked about it not that long ago, is Boyhood, which is everyone's favorite movie of the year, including Barack Obama's. But you know what? I stand by my decision. So that's the movie that Richard Linklater took 12 years to shoot with the same cast, and I know that
some people
think it's a gimmick, but to me that was like the whole point of the movie. It just wouldn't have been the same if it had been like a different actor subbed in all the time, but because it was all the same actor, you actually feel like you're like watching this kid grow up, you feel like you're growing up with them. and you're watching it and you just keep waiting for things, or I just kept waiting for something to happen because like all the scenes are kind of mundane. And then like after a point, I was just like, wait, like he's it like is, 5 years, it's like 5 years, he's like 5 years older now.
And
his
it
life's
is
happened.
A
that
gimmick
was life.
Because like one thing serves the other so well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you needed that for the story. And
it's like, to me, that's like saying like songs are a gimmick in a musical. Sorry. it's just like, to me, that was the tool that he
sometimes
used.
They are a gimmick in the musical, though.
Alright, fine. But
not all, when the song isn't a gimmick in a musical, you know you have a musical with a good story.
That's yeah,
a
good there point. We go. So, I mean, I thought it was, I've never seen a movie that felt so much to me like what it feels like to live life. It's a movie where, like, you know, like I said, not that much happens sometimes. Like, some years, like, you just see him and he's like, I don't know, doing his homework or something fucking boring. But that's part of life, and I think that's what I loved about it, is that most movies, most coming-of-age movies especially, are just like, oh, let's, like, do, like, the graduation, or, like, the first love, or the breakup, or, like, the parents' divorce, like, the big moments.
Mm-hmm.
This one was about all the stuff in between, which, when you think about your life, that's, like, a lot of it is. Like, when I think about my life, a lot of it is those big moments, but then a lot of it's just, like, you know, me sitting at home, like,
the editing
catching
in that
up
movie is really good. Like, I'm surprised how well it all flows. Like, you would think it'd feel like it was starting and stopping over and over, but
you would think that it would feel more like kind of episodic than it does. Like, it does feel episodic because it is, but it, like you said, it just flows together really well.
That's interesting, because I think that feeds into our next pick, which is our number 4 movie, if you don't mind.
Did we both like go like that? Because I know I just did.
That's funny. Yeah, so our number 4 movie that we don't have written down on notes right off camera is Under the Skin, which I actually think does fit in, because you get set up to the system of this... she's basically an extraterrestrial succubus who hunts men, and you kind of get introduced to her routine, but they manage to subvert it and change it a little bit each time, so I didn't think it felt repetitive. And Under the Skin was a movie that was my personal top one, my number one on my list, because... I haven't felt like this in a movie since, like, I saw 2001 A Space Odyssey. And no, I didn't see that, like, in theaters when it came out because I was not alive. But, like, I've seen it in theaters. It's a good thing. So, it's just the way they use, like, inkiness and the way they use color and the way they play with images. It's very surreal and it fucked with my head. And the sound design feels like it's sucking you in. And I was just enraptured with this movie. And I thought Scarlett Johansson was incredible in it, playing this character who is... It is a sexual creature, but in a way of, like, trapping, but then we start to see this monster become human. I just thought the whole story was really engaging, exciting, and I got to write about it for the Mary Sue, and it was a movie that meant a lot to me this year. I just thought it was really beautiful and exciting.
I thought it was one of the most cinematic movies that I've seen this year, for all the reasons you said. The weird thing is, it's actually based on a book, but when I watched the movie, I was just like, I can't even imagine the story being told any other way, which I think is just, like, a mark that it's, like, a really good adaptation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, to make it feel so much like a movie that you're like, it has to, it can only be a movie.
Yeah.
The other thing I liked about it is Scarlett Johansson is someone that, especially, like, a few years ago, I kind of thought, like, oh, you know, she's kind of a blank actress, she's just a pretty face. And she actually is in this movie, but she uses it to her advantage, like, that's kind of the point of the character.
Yeah.
And I thought that it just played with her image and subverted it so well.
Especially because there are moments where she is kind of... she's figuring out herself as a character, and I feel like it shows us really what Scarlett Johansson can do as an actress. I think they're right. I think she gets cast a lot just to be pretty, and I think this
she
movie
used
shows...
used to. She's getting
better fucking roles, and good for her. But I think this is one of the ones that really just takes advantage of her as an actress, and I thought it was really exciting and creepy, and I'm probably going to watch it again tomorrow.
Yeah, I think it's on Netflix or something, so...
I have a screener, so what else?
So, on to number 3, Birdman, another really cinematic experience. That's the Alejandro González Iñárritu. I always, like, have to make sure I'm saying that right.
I'm impressed. I wasn't even gonna try. Like, the guy that did Babel, guys.
It's his movie, and it stars Michael Keaton as a somewhat Michael Keaton-like figure, who is an actor who now is washed up, but once upon a time was very famous for playing a superhero, decided to walk away from the franchise, and is now kind of struggling to get his career back on track, which he does by mounting a Broadway play. As we're, like, right in, like, the heart of the Broadway area. Anyway, sorry, unrelated.
Yeah, in case you didn't know, guys, this is legit New Year's Eve in Times Square. We're, a block away.
Hell yeah.
You're welcome.
And the whole movie is
kind of
shot, like, so the movie takes place in, like, the run-up to his big opening, and the whole movie is shot like it's one take. It's not, and if you look really closely...
Yeah.
Are looking for, you can tell where they cut, but it's, you know, it looks pretty seamless. And that was one of the things that, you know, it's another thing that, like, you're like, oh, it's like a gimmick. But to me, it was another one that it felt like it serves
the story. It makes you feel like you're trapped in that building right along with them.
Yeah.
And it makes you follow him much more so, where he feels kind of, like, confined and feels the pressure of all those people around him.
And it feels like that rush of leading up to something big, like opening night. And it to me, and I haven't done, I mean, like, you know, I did, like, local theater in high school, so I'm not going to compare it to anything on Broadway, but I related to that sense of, like, getting excited for a show and of things seeming to go wrong, and I think this is one of the best behind-the-scenes, like, you know, play movies that I've ever seen, and it's really fucking funny and dark, and it goes into this...
And beautiful to look at.
Yeah, and it goes into this really surrealist aspect, and I think my favorite scene is the one they play a lot in the trailers, where you see him in his underwear walking through Times Square, and, like, that was a real thing that they did. They really shot in Times Square. And, like, I love that. And, like, and also I think the three of us can attest, it's a New York movie that feels like it was fucking shot in New York, because it was. And I, like, I love that. I love the way places actually represent.
It felt
it's
like
true. Like, I've never worked on a Broadway show, but I imagine that must be what it feels like. You know, to walk in and, like, go inside the actual theater part, and then to walk outside the stage door and what you see out there.
I felt
apparently
really
that's
felt
the closest I'll ever come to working in a Broadway show.
Right.
It felt very, like, intimate and at the same time very expansive. I know that doesn't...
I'm sorry, I got distracted with the idea of us throwing a Broadway production.
You know...
Someone's got to edit in, like, a thought bubble.
Top 10 Prosecco on Broadway. How good would that look lit up on a billboard? Come on.
You guys would love that.
Yeah, that should happen.
Anywho,
move on to the next one.
But yeah, we all love Birdman!
Hey!
Another movie that was on all of our top 10s. Was fucking Snowpiercer, guys. It's a sci-fi, post-apocalyptic movie set on a train, and I think one of my favorite things about the movie is how it starts us off with the have-nots in the back of the train and moves each car up. You get, like, a new part of this world, and the world-building even is so exciting and so rich, and it just makes you want to watch it again and again, and it's on Netflix, so you should be.
There's so many things to look at, and there's so many different characters to latch onto, also. Like, I feel like you could have a favorite character, and it could be anyone. Like, it blows my mind how much Octavia Spencer stands out when she's, like, not even, like, the main person.
No, totally.
But she's always there in the background, and I can always, like, spot her, no matter how many people are in the room. There she is.
I love how detailed the whole world feels. Like, it feels so rich and detailed, which, you know, we watch a lot of movies with a lot of stuff, but a lot of the times the worlds don't feel lived in. They feel like, you know, you're watching a movie where some set designer came in and, like, littered the set with stuff.
Yeah.
This one doesn't feel like that. I mean, I know that's literally what happened, but...
No,
but it feels
you're
like
right.
There's, like, little details everywhere, like, you know, even, like, the costumes they're wearing feels so... It tells you a story about, like, who these people are and how they live and, like, you know, what kind of mentality they have and, like, things like that. I know you were saying that when you go back and rewatch it, you've noticed even, like, little Easter eggs along the way.
Yeah, there's, like, hints to what happens toward the end of the film, and, like, there's cool things where if you're just a fan of, like, you know, sci-fi dystopia, like, one of the characters is named Gilliam. It may not be the most subtle thing, but it gave me all these little things that it's like, oh, it's just John Hurt and Tilda Swinton and Chris Evans. There are so many good people in this movie that it's just so much fun to watch.
Do you guys have a favorite scene? Because every time I watch it, I'm always like, that's my favorite scene.
The sushi scene cracks me up. I think the sushi scene for me is such a great moment of privilege, and but, like, there's better scenes of the movie.
Oh,
I
know what my favorite scene is. Alison Pill.
I was gonna say the classroom scene.
That is actually one of the more, like, it's like the part of the movie that's actually bright and colorful and cheerful.
And it's
but
like,
it's like
you
the
look,
most
you
upsetting.
Look at their costumes when they walk in, like, in contrast with their room and shit.
Yeah.
And like, you get so much great information in that scene too. Because that's where you learn, like, outside and what had happened and
Yeah, it's a really, it's just such an amazing movie. And what's funny is I read, like, part of the comics that it's based on, and, like, the comics are nothing like it. It's so much better than the comics. It takes the concept into something way more interesting.
I bet that's what Under the Skin is like. Another thing that they adapted and just made completely their own. That's great.
Yeah, so we love Snowpiercer. Watch it on Netflix.
And now, the top of our list, which another movie that was on all three of our lists, and we're all a little obsessed
with. Pretty
high. There's a poster for it over there. I could throw in a picture of that.
Because Carrie's proud of it.
Yeah, I am quite proud of it. It's the Babadook. I'm obsessed with the Babadook.
The Babadook.
The Babadook. Duck. Duck. I can do
if
that.
Someone knocks on the door now, I'm going to scream.
But anyway, the Babadook.
Duck.
Because it rhymes with book and look is... It's not only one of the best movies of the year, but I think it's one of the best horror movies I've seen in a really long time.
Yeah.
One of the most creative-looking villains that I've ever seen, and also just, I mean, the Babadook's motivation and what it represents.
And it has a great sense of menace. It's not a movie that's just... It's not a movie you could just go home and are able to put away. It lingers.
It lingers with me for weeks. And the thing is, though, like, it's not just that it's a scary movie. It's that it taps into things that are really terrifying. Like, things that are real-life terrifying. And
I think you could get one or the other. Like, if you want a good scare, relax, and turn your mind off, this has it. You can watch it for that reason. But if you want something that's a little more intellectual, has a little more layers, and has something that you could take with you, if you pay attention to what this is about and what everything in it means,
it's not like it's that hard to discern. It's what I think is so great about this is because it hooks you with this kind of monster movie, and then it gives you this really interesting drama about a single mom and her son, which may not sound like that's up your alley, but the way they tell us, it's just beautiful. And Essie Davis is incredible.
There's so many things in this movie that are like praiseworthy, like her performance, the kids' performance,
the cinematography, the sound design,
and the theme, the Babadook theme.
Oh my God,
it's stuck in my head. Everything about the Babadook's voice.
Yeah, I mean, like, this was like a movie that had, like, grown adult film critics talking to each other in whispers for months. Like, this movie is outstanding. And I agree, I don't think it's just one of the best movies of the year. I think it's one of the best, like, flat-out horror movies of probably one of the best of the past 20 years.
I made it my top movie of the year, and then it was my second movie behind Wild.
I think it deserves, like, instant classic status. Honestly, one of the ways that you could tell is that when I was watching the movie, it felt
the most classic villain now.
I don't know. I was surprised almost that it was an original movie because it just felt so primal. It just felt so familiar. Not in a way that, like, I was like, oh, it just feels like a ripoff. But in a way that it just kind of, like, I don't know, it felt like it, like, exposed something that was there all along.
Exactly. It's like one of those songs that you hear, and even though it's a new song, you feel like you grew up with it. Because it seems familiar, and not in a way, like, you're like, no, that had to have existed. And I've actually gotten in fights with people about this who have been like, no, the Babadook is, like, an Australian thing. And I'm like, no, it's not. She made it up. Like, she's talked about this. And
it was kind of rooted in an idea. But, like, very loosely, right?
Yeah.
Like the Babadook is a
like
thing.
Like, she actually invented the word Babadook for one.
Yeah, no, she did.
Which is so perfect.
It grew from something, like, very general that anyone could apply to any person.
Like there's, like, a mythology out of Australia, which is where the film is from. It's not like there's some, mythology there that they're just throwing on screen. Like, Jennifer Kent, the writer-director, she created something really exciting and new and, you know, terrifying and, like,
entertaining and thought-provoking and something that makes you feel a lot. I mean, it's
in theaters and it's on VOD.
It's awesome.
You should absolutely, like, it's on VOD. There's no reason not to rent this and scare the shit out of yourself.
We're wrapping up the year by telling you to scare the shit out of yourself. So that's awesome.
All right, on that note, that's a wrap of episode 47 of Popcorn Prosecco and a wrap on 2014.
Woo! You know, by the time anyone sees it, it's going to be 2015.
Happy 2015, everyone.
But it's like fresh enough.
But guys, watch this and just feel like you celebrated New Year's Eve with us because you have.
I feel like I need to put these on. I'm going to be so disoriented. I'm going to, like, mess up our calling cards here. So, first, you need to watch us on YouTube, which you might be doing right now. If you're not doing that, you can watch us or listen to us on iTunes, and we would love if you'd review, comment, give us stars, whatever
subscribe.
It is over there. Subscribe is a big help. We're also on our own website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter, @popcornprosecco. We are on Facebook as well, and then the three of us are all over the interwebs, too. Angie, you want to go first?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, @AJHAN, and I write for /film.com.
And I'm @ChristyPutchko on Twitter, and you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
Stop it. You can catch me on Twitter.
Harry
at
bought these and she can't handle them.
Because, like, you were looking at me. You're giving
How
me a
dare you?
Look. @PNemiroff, and I write for Collider.com. And, like, yeah, that's it.
And this is, like, a super professional episode.
Let's
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. My glass is empty. No, my stem is not empty.
Your stem's not empty. That's how champagne works. Bah, bah.